Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the 2008 World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up the deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
And welcome to downtown St. Louis in the Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel Poker Room. I am Paul Harris alongside Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips, who actually has a day free from all of his road trips recently. Welcome back to St. Louis.
I'm not for sure I'd say a day free, but I am in St. Louis. Yes.
Yes, you are.
I've only had about six meetings today already, but that's okay.
Last week when we were doing the show, you were in New York with Joe Cada, the 2009 World Series of Poker main event champion. You were, I don't know if chaperone is the correct word, but
I don't know, there's a lot of words you can use. Chaperone isn't exactly the right one.
But you were hanging with him as he was doing the David Letterman show last week, and I know you also did WWE and a hockey game and a bunch of other stuff. So tell us about your adventures last week.
Oh, it was kind of awesome. Obviously, I had never been on the David Letterman show. We were there. We were in the green room. We were talking with the producers and that. I met the other people that were going in there. It was fun, absolutely, and Joe did a good job. Walked in there. He was a little nervous, of course, but Dave put him at ease. They questioned back and forth, shuffled a few cards, the whole bit. He just had a great time in New York. We went to Del Frisco's, a great restaurant there in New York.
Before you leave the Letterman show, I got to ask you.
Okay, here we go.
You were not on.
No, I was not.
Joe was on, and he had a nice little, I don't know, about 6 or 7 or 8 minutes.
7 minutes and 10 seconds, but who's keeping track? Okay.
And I know you're backstage, and you're watching him out there doing that. Yep. And you say he was nervous. He didn't come off as nervous at all. For a 21-year-old kid to be on the Letterman show and seem like he was so comfortable, I was amazed.
Yeah, I told him just pretend he's at a table. No big deal.
Yeah.
Pretend you're at the table. You do great on that. You're comfortable. There you go again.
I guess once you've been in front of the cameras and played for $8.5 million, being there with Letterman's nothing, right?
No, he was nervous. Beforehand, he was very nervous and worried, this and that. He's not used to getting makeup put on, all this other stuff. This is a whole spectrum of items he's never done before, but he handles it very well.
Were you with him earlier in the day when they did what's called the pre-interview?
Yeah, I was there on that when they quizzed him and such. One of the producers of the show is a very avid poker player. So he asked a lot of questions that Dave would never get into. Mm-hmm. He did it for himself. So half of the interview was basically quizzing, you know, on himself.
Yeah.
We even tried to set up a game afterwards with some of the producers, you know, playing a little card game afterwards. But, you know, that unfortunately didn't happen. But they said, next time in New York, come on, guys. You know, we want you here.
So afterwards you went out to a nice meal.
We did.
And then you went to Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, we did. Monday Night Raw.
Oh, this was the night before.
Actually,
he did the show on Tuesday,
and then we went to the Rangers game that night. You're absolutely right. It kind of was a blur. We did a ton of different interviews. We made the Cavs rich in New York that day.
Uh-huh.
We were flying from one building to another one doing interviews and
stuff.
Did
you actually do any interviews? Were you ever on TV or interviewed by any of these people?
Yeah, I did several of the interviews also with him.
Nice.
On that, and that was good. Did one with Fox Business where we were concerned about some of the issues that were going on in Washington. Joe felt more comfortable me being on there with him.
Uh-huh.
This is for Joe, period. I was there to help him because I've been through it and try and help him out and make sure it's smoothly. Honestly, I don't think he needed me most of the time. It was just sort of a comfort level being there.
Was the Fox Business News interview the one where you got referred to on the air as Joe's coach?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Well, what happened there? How did that happen?
I don't know how it went. The person that was interviewing us said beforehand, and you're what, his coach or something? I said, I'm absolutely not. Joe doesn't need a coach. We play against each other, the whole bit like that. And so she turned around, looked at the camera, and said, and with him is his coach, Dennis Phillips. And I'm going, no. But, you know,
I'm guessing it said that on the teleprompter, and she just read whatever was
absolutely
on the teleprompter.
Absolutely. I'm sure that's what it was. So it was kind of funny, actually.
So that's some producer who screwed up in writing that ahead of time.
Yeah, so I am not Joe's coach.
But you mentioned Raw.
Yeah.
which was last Monday night.
Correct.
And we got emails from some people who saw you on Raw. Did you get phone calls and texts from people
phones
who saw
and
you
texts.
There?
We were right there on the front row. Literally, we were the ones leaning on the little protector on it. And it was awesome. One of the guys from the ring, one of the skits they did or whatever, was over there and grabbing one of the announcers and throwing them around. And all
right in front of you?
I could reach out and touch the guy. So we're standing up right there in front of it, and the camera's doing it, and, of course, we're getting seen. My phone went off, Joe's went off, Dan's went off, another friend of ours that was there, saying, you know, what are you doing at Monday Night Raw? And I texted him back, what are you doing watching Monday Night Raw? And, you know, we were having fun with it.
Uh-huh.
One guy texted, even he did, says, great view on TV, and, by the way, great watch. He saw the reactor watch on the show there and everything.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's the new one that they gave
you. You know, by the way, while we have a moment here, since they're one of our sponsors, let's get their plug out of the way right now since you mentioned them.
Yeah.
This is a new watch. I've never seen you wear this one
before.
No,
it is. It's a brand new one they gave me. It's totally awesome. It's another one of their just totally durable watches you can do anything with.
It's got kind of an orange-red faceplate.
It is. It's actually with a cardinal red on the back. Albert Pujols is also one of the sponsors. They gave him one with it. They looked at me and said, oh, we got to give you one now, too. And, of course, I didn't object too much.
No.
So this thing's just a flat-out awesome watch.
And
I love it.
And when the guy who texted you or called you or whatever it was or emailed you about being on Raw,
yes.
did you send him back a little plug for the watch? If you want more information.
There you go. Absolutely. It's unbelievable. You got the whole screen here. You got this action. This guy physically throwing another one around, and he's watching my watch. Think on that, guys. So it was pretty awesome.
Let me just say, as we complete the plug for Reactor Watch here, if you want to find out more about them, you can go to Dennis's website, thechipleader.com, click on the sponsors there. We've got a link to all of our sponsors individually right there, and Reactor Watch being one of them.
Okay.
So that's a heck of a couple of days you had there in New York.
Yeah, everything was great except for the Rangers losing because I had a prop bet for them winning. But, you know,
Minor
little things like that. But it was a good game. I watched it. Well played.
Joe do for his birthday? Because we had him on the show Tuesday. That's the day he did our show and the Letterman show.
Yeah.
And then the next day, he turned 22 years old.
Yeah, he did. Actually, what he did was work all day. He had interviews with ESPN the whole day, went to Bristol, Connecticut, didn't do anything special. That night when he got back, when it turned midnight, we did do a little mini celebration there.
Mm-hmm.
Just congratulating. We got a nice bottle of champagne, the whole bit like that. But he was by himself in New York in a hotel room doing interviews.
Woohoo! I'm 22!
There you go. This is the life that he's got.
I'm a multimillionaire on my birthday. Where is everybody?
Yeah, no kidding. So, but again, he took everything so well in stride, and he's adapting to it. There are just some things you have to give up. Part of it being, you know, sorry, it's my birthday, but I have work to do.
Yeah, and he'll have plenty of time to party.
He absolutely will.
Plenty of time for that.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of the guy who finished first, what about the guy who finished second, Darvin Moon, mm-hmm. who I thought we were going to have on the show today? Where'd he go? Did he go back to the woods like he said he was going to?
Unfortunately, Darvin can't go back to the woods either. I talked to him today. I've talked to him a couple of times since then. He's got several things planned. He had a meeting today he had to cancel out. He apologized, said he'll come on next week. He'll try and do us whatever.
Okay.
But he's in the meeting, couldn't guarantee you to do it. He's also getting ready because on Friday he's heading to New Orleans. He's going to watch a game between the New Orleans Saints mm-hmm. and the New England Patriots.
Yeah, probably one
Monday
of the,
night.
Probably one of the games of the year.
Oh, my gosh. It's the game for this weekend, and it's got to be one of the top half dozen now for the year.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And he's going to have, you know, prime seats probably up there in the presidential setup. They're also having a charity tournament with him as a headliner down there on it.
Oh, really?
So, and he's proud to do that.
Okay.
We talked about a few other things. He's going to go back to Vegas on the second week of December. He's going to play in the Bellagio, the Five Diamond Classic.
Really?
He was asking if I would be there, and I said absolutely. And there's also a charity event on the 12th, the day before the main event out there, held at the Hard Rock. And he's kind enough that he's going to go to there and help promote it and buy into
now,
the tournament.
Wait a second.
The whole bit.
Wait a second.
Yes.
Part, I know.
Part
of the Darvin Moon mystique was this logger from Western Maryland who'd never flown on a plane, who'd never been to Vegas, who didn't have a credit card, who didn't have a computer, who had just won this thing as a lark in his local tournament there with some friends, and he'd gone out there and he'd, you know, stampeded in the last couple of days to become the chip leader of this, but always said when in every interview, look, when this is over, I'm going back to the woods and you won't hear from me again. And now he's playing the Five Diamond. He's doing a thing at the Hard Rock with you. What's the story?
Well, a lot of it is actually charity work. And he didn't want to get involved, didn't want to talk about it beforehand because he was already so swamped.
The Five Diamond is not charity work.
It is not.
Except for Mrs. Moon.
Well, This is true. Maybe she'll get a riding lawnmower yet. But anyhow, but you know, he is absolutely going to do that. But he's doing these charity things. He's trying to promote the sport of poker because it has given him quite a bit. He's taken the right attitude, but he still is not going to go flying around the world. He's not going to become a quote pro and do nothing but this.
Uh-huh.
He's keeping it within controls, but he is going to play a tournament every couple of months or something like that.
And the only logo he continues to wear is the New Orleans Saints cap, right?
That is exactly right.
Wow. Now, I have a question for you, and on today's show, we don't have a guest. We'll have Joe McGowan, the poker coach, join us in a few minutes here.
Okay.
But we have a lot of email that's kind of been backing up because we have done week after week after week of coverage of the main event of the World Series of Poker with you being there and with all of the other things that we talked about here on the show. So I'm going to get to a lot of email today, and one of them is from a guy named Tim who wants to know about the story about Darvin resisting the lucrative offers to be sponsored by PokerStars or other online sites. He says, when I hear about these stories, I wonder just how lucrative a sponsorship deal is for the guys who make the final table. Now, you were there last year.
Correct.
You're not going to divulge your own personal deal, which you've worked out with PokerStars. But just give Tim and our listeners a general idea of what, if you make it to that final nine, the November nine, what kind of things get thrown at you? What did Darvin turn down?
When you make it to the final nine, if you sign with the PokerStars, the minimum amount you make on that is $150,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's for going out in ninth place. And it's graduated all the way up. Top prize, what Joe got as a bonus from PokerStars was $1 million.
Wow.
And that is public knowledge and everything on it.
Mm-hmm.
What's not public is the opportunities that go with it. By being with PokerStars and the chance that if you prove yourself, you become a good ambassador and you maybe place well in some others, having a continual relationship with them, having a contract on the second year and the third year and everything that way.
Right.
So a minimum amount of 150, a maximum of $1 million, plus a lot of perks in between.
Yep.
PokerStars takes care of you.
And so last week when we announced that you signed a new deal with PokerStars, that's above and beyond what you're talking about here.
Correct. That's totally separate from it. That's for the other items I've been doing, everything like
that. And what about the people who don't make the final table but may make it to the final 27 or last 100? When do PokerStars people start talking to them and say, wear our hat, in the hopes that that person will get TV coverage from ESPN, wear our hat and here's a check? When does that start?
Actually, from day one, there is some of that for the feature tables. If you're lucky enough or unlucky enough to get on a table maybe with a Phil Hellmuth and he's on the feature table and you want to wear the PokerStars garb, there is some financial compensation there. It's not a major amount, but yes, just for putting on their sweater, their hat, whatever, they will give you a little bit of money on that.
Uh-huh.
But the actual serious talk for actually signing for it and trying to do it doesn't usually occur until there's about 27 people left. And that's when they really start going after it. If
mm-hmm.
you're one of the chip leaders, when you get down to that final couple of days, that's when everybody's going to be talking to you. That's when you need your attorney and your friends and whatever to give you some guidance and to figure this out.
All right, Tim, there's your answer. Thanks for emailing. The email address, by the way, is DennisPhilosPoker@gmail.com. And I apologize that over the last month we have not gotten any email because we've been so busy with guests and other things on the show. We're going to try to do a better job of that. When we come back, the poker coach Joe McGowan will join us. This portion of our show today is brought to you by One Time Apparel. Speaking of stuff you can put on, I'm wearing my final table One Time Apparel hat, and Dennis has his One Time t-shirt or shirt on right now. All of this from the company founded by our friend Kevin Stefan, who's a poker player right here in St. Louis. He debuted this stuff at Pokerpalooza at the World Series of Poker this summer out at the Rio, and it has been a big hit everywhere he's taken it so far. I'm seeing more and more people with the one-time shirts on, and even this weekend on the PokerStars Million Dollar Challenge, Daniel Negreanu wasn't wearing the one-time garb, but he said, one time, a couple of times, and I thought, get that man a hat, get that man a shirt. You can get your own shirts by going to the website, onetimeapparel.com. See all the stuff that they've got available and choose from the polo shirts, the baseball jerseys, the T-shirts, the hoodies, the T-shirts for ladies, and the hats as well. All right there at onetimeapparel.com or click that sponsor link on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. Right back with more of the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
Hi, Bob Eubanks here. I can't wait to come to town with my $250,000 game show spectacular.
This November, the game shows you once loved are your chance to win big cash. At Lumiere Place Casino and Hotels, play through November to win a seat in the game show audience November 28th. And if Bob Eubanks calls your name, you could be one of 50 to take home cash and prizes. And six lucky contestants will play for their chance at $250,000. Get to Lumiere Place and earn your spot in the audience today. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Tuesday is Poker Day on 590 The Fan KFNS. So here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris, live from downtown St. Louis at the Lumiere Place Final Table.
And we are joined now by Joe McGowan, the poker coach. Hi, Joe. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. And I'm amazed that Dennis and I are actually sitting next to each other for the first time in quite some time.
Hey, Dennis, how's it going?
How's it going, Joe?
I said that we were going to get to a lot of email on today's show, and I'm going to start with one in this segment for you. A listener named Reggie wrote and said he had been watching the main event coverage on ESPN and was really caught up in the Phil Ivey hype. And when he watched it, he was kind of disappointed that he didn't get to see Ivey playing more hands, and he specifically wanted to know about how Ivey played at that final table, and particularly about a hand in which Phil Ivey folded a pair of jacks when he got re-raised. Now, I can't remember exactly what the details of the hand were, but Dennis, you were there. Joe, I know you were also there around the final table. So tell me a little bit about your perception of how Phil Ivey played that, and in particular, why he would fold jacks when he was short-stacked.
Okay. Well, I think one of the tricks, just in general, yes, he was short-stacked relative to the average of this table, but he wasn't necessarily in horrible shape relative to the blinds. A lot of times people might get caught up with who's the chip leader and how many chips they have. If you really look at the blinds, also with that, the levels were every 2 hours. It wasn't like an online tournament where every 10 minutes, some type of turbo online tournament, you know, the blinds are going up. You know, it's every 2 hours, so I think Phil Ivey was up to about 16 million at the time that he had the jacks. And what happened was he went ahead and raised up front. Now, you need to remember that he was pretty much card dead, in my opinion, because I was there and Dennis was there. He never showed down aces or kings or ace-king until his final hand. And he really didn't get involved a whole lot, so he hadn't been playing a lot. So for him to raise up front under the gun, to me, kind of said, hey, I have a hand. And then I believe it was Saut that made it. Ivey made it about 1.2. Dennis, I don't know if you can help me with this. And Saut then made it about 4 million. Does that sound right?
Yeah, very close. I think it was like 4.2 or 3, something like that. But yeah.
Okay. I knew it was something like that. So at that point, it comes back to Ivey. And again, I really don't know what he's thinking, but in my opinion, if I'm put on the spot of why he would fold, he's got to say to himself, geez, you know, I raised under the gun. I really haven't been involved for 10 hours. And here's a guy that Saut, you know, I've never seen him make a naked bluff preflop myself. And even, you know, poking around looking at the hand histories, I mean, that kid was playing the most solid poker of everybody at the table. Mm-hmm. I think if that was Joe Cada that had re-raised, Ivey calls or probably moves all in or re-raises. And likely the only play there would be to move all in because Joe was raising light and playing a lot of hands. But for Saut to do that, I'd say his range, and we talk about range, that's just, you know, what particular hands you can put them on. Sometimes people's ranges are aces, kings, or queens only, say. And other times, people that are very, very active, their range could be any two cards. Now, for Saut, on my opinion, his range there to re-raise is probably like sevens through aces, ace, king, ace, queen. I think twos through fives, you know, he probably just calls to try to hit a set of the upfront raiser of Ivey that he probably doesn't want to tangle around with. Sixes I'm not too sure about. And I think that the, you know, for him to raise with sevens, of course, then puts him, in my opinion, the bottom of his range. And to make it the 4 million when it comes back to Ivey, And he's sitting there with the hand everybody talks about, you know, their least favorite hand is Jacks, and how do you play it? That's the running joke. You're in a tough spot with Jacks. You know, you just made it up to $16 million. You've been short, you know, real short all day. Now you're at a reasonable spot. What do you do? And, you know, if you just call, now what? You know, the flop comes out an ace or a king or a queen, and you check it, and your opponent does a continuation bet, or they might have it, or you might be dead to begin with. And I think, you know, ultimately his reasoning might be, and I don't want to be too tough on the table, but I think he probably felt like there's people making a lot of mistakes at this table, and there were people there that were, you know, going all in with king nines and upfront raisers, and then moving all in with ace queens, you know, calling all ins from up front with very marginal hands, you know, just tons of mistakes. A couple of them we've talked about before. It's like 4-5. The 4-5 I think was a big mistake by Buckman. You know, a lot of mistakes, and I think Ivy probably felt he could pick a much better spot than to kind of go with a hand like that that he's really not sure where he's at. And if he's got aces, kings, or queens, it's over. And if he's got ace, king, ace, queen, it's a coin flip. So, Dennis, what do you feel about that hand? Do you have anything you could add to,
yeah,
to what I'm talking about
actually,
at all?
Actually, pretty similar. But from the way he played, I actually wouldn't have even put him on sevens or eights. I'd have had him on nines or better on it. I don't know what Phil's thought
sure.
was, but I would
that.
Have had
I'd
him on
have
nines
him on
or better.
Better than that.
I was actually surprised when I saw the sevens on it. So I didn't think it was a bad lay down at all. Right there, unless he has the nines or the tens, you either have a race or you're dominated. And he already had a quarter of, by doing this, he would put a quarter of his chips in. So if he just smooth calls, he has to either catch the jack or have tiny cards and hope he doesn't have the aces, kings, or queens. And if he shoves, you know, boom, he's either racing, dominated, or maybe very lucky if he has the nines or tens.
Yeah, two things I'll just inject here. One,
there,
no way is he calling. He has two moves, all in or fold. That's it. Because as Joe said, if any overcard comes on the flop, he's not going to know what to do because jacks are the worst hand to play.
Again, that's the standard play. Being Phil doesn't make the standard play all the time. He can make a smooth call portraying almost aces or kings here or something trying to trap him. I mean, there's lots of other ways to do this.
Yes.
The standard move, you're absolutely right. With a quarter of your chips in there, do you do that or do you just shove it in there and roll the dice?
Now, the other thing is, if Saud did have aces, kings, or queens, making Ivy technically the massive underdog at this final table, he's the favorite. Anybody who's a massive underdog at that table was going to hit a two or three outer, and Phil would have won the whole tournament right there.
Okay, and I have no insight to what Phil was thinking. In my opinion, from the way he played and everything, and I could be 100% wrong here, but I'm going to throw it out there anyhow.
Yep.
I honestly thought that if he could play down to where there was only four, five, six people left, he saw the play on the table. He's much, much more experienced at a short table than these other guys. A lot of them play only tournaments. They play where it's, you know, your table's filled back up and there's nine and eight people there at all times.
Yep.
He was should have been a dominant favorite when you get down to three or four people at that table. All he had to have was a decent chip stack. If he could have gone down four-handed with $20 million in front of him, in my opinion, he's now the favorite at the table. I don't care if the other three all have more than him.
Mm-hmm.
And all he had to do was achieve that, and all he had to do was catch a few blooming cards, which he never did. He was hard dead the whole day.
I 100% agree with you, Dennis. So, there's no question that Phil
would be a huge
favorite, you know, as it got shorter.
Yeah.
Even with shortish type chips, because he's really not as short as you might think with $16 million.
Exactly.
At that point.
Yeah, so
I totally
I don't
agree.
Mind laying down.
I think also, what's that, Paul? Did you say something?
No, go ahead, Joe.
Oh, okay. I think also that, you know, looking back, you know, what he probably saw it on TV, like any person, like, oh, man, I wish I played that hand differently at that spot. It's easy to look back and say, oh, you know, I should have done this or I possibly, you know, could have done that. But at the time, all you can do is make what you feel is the right play at that time, you know, and it's a pet peeve for most poker players when you're at the table and you had, you know, who knows what, and it comes, and you say, oh, I would have played this, you know, if I played, I would have had a straight. Now, if you play all the poor hands and all the marginal bad spots that you shouldn't, you'll go broke as a poker player. So Phil Ivey is one that, you know, can make that type of laydown, and, you know, find better spots, and a better spot might not be kings. It might be 3-5 offsuit where it's a good spot for him to bluff. So finding good situations and you know, having those things happen. And really, he did. He got it in with ace-king versus ace-queen. Now, his chips were shorter, but, you know, I think the laydown of the jacks for him, looking at it from what I could see, and again, I don't know for sure, but I think it was definitely the right play at that time.
Actually, later on, when he had the ace-eight and Kata shoved on him when he had, the fours, and he took forever. I was back there with Dan Harrington and some of the other guys, and it was 1.8 on the pot odds, and Dan's standing next to me. What's the hesitation? He has to call. There's no way you can lay this down. Well, poker-wise, you're absolutely right. There's no way you can lay that down. You have to make that call. But you don't want to make it because there's a decent chance you're dominated. There's all this other. And I loved Phil's comment. He said, you know, what? Kata said, well, how could you take so long? I assumed you're just going to call. And Ivy's over here going, I'm trying to find some way to fold.
Yeah, I'm trying.
I don't want to make this call.
I'm trying to talk myself out of calling here.
You know, he realizes that he could easily be beaten. Everything. It's like, wow.
There's the difference. And again, for people and our listeners to pay attention, and for the gentleman that emailed in, he's a different type of player. You know, there's Joe, and Ivy's calling with ace eight. You know, Joe is playing a very wide range of hands, even well before the final table. And that's kind of his profile, you know. And, you know, being aggressive definitely works out at the poker table in general. So, you know, for Saud, he probably ended up with the reputation of playing the most solid poker and maybe looked at by a lot of poker pros as maybe playing pretty much the best at that table along with Ivy and, you know, I'm not sure who else, but I think he played very, very well and got a little unlucky. But he was playing very, very solid, solid poker. And when he was in the pot, you're a little more fearful as opposed to after time, you know, with Moon, I don't know if he's bluffing or, you know, bluff calling or has aces or a set or what he's got. You know, he was kind of all over the place as well and playing very aggressively. And Joe played well, but obviously got lucky in a couple of key spots, and what perfect timing to have it happen at a final table of the main event. So, you know, good for him.
Well, I never want to second-guess Phil Ivey. Don't get me wrong. And I think, in my opinion, laying down the jacks there, even though if he'd have seen the other hand, obviously you're disappointed, was the correct move. I think I would have hoped I would have laid down the jacks in that same position.
I would hope I would do that too, but I know I wouldn't. And here's one other point, just to go back to the first thing Joe said in answer to your question, Reggie, and that is that there are two-hour rounds.
Yeah.
Now, remember that when you watched it on ESPN, the final table, you saw 2 hours before it got to heads up. 2 hours out of 17 and a half hours of play.
Yeah.
So when Joe McGowan says that Phil Ivey was card dead for that time, and you think to yourself, wait a second, I saw him get jacks, I saw him get kings, I saw him get ace-king, he wasn't card dead. Those are three of the hands you saw out of 17 and a half hours of play. And with two-hour rounds, if he was just waiting for his opportunity because he knew he didn't have to make moves because the blinds weren't going to be popping every 10, 15, 20 minutes, this wasn't a turbo tournament, that changes a lot of things and changes the way you're going to play at that table. And Phil Ivey knows that better than anyone. All right, we got to take a break. We've got more email to get to. Joe McGowan is the poker coach. Dennis Phillips is the Team Poker Stars Pro. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Lumiere Place Final Table. And this portion of our show is brought to you by Poker Stars.
Definitely, Poker Stars. That is the place I play all the time. PokerStars.net brings out the Poker Stars in you. That's where you go if you want to play all the champions. Look at the lineup there. It's unbelievable. And we've added another one this year with Joe Kata. We now have the winner of the World Series of Poker in almost every year for the last, my gosh, since 03.
Yep.
Just look at that lineup. Unbelievable. And then you add in a Barry Greenstein. Then you add in a Daniel Negreanu. There's a reason why we all play at this site, guys, and you've got to go check it out. If you want to learn the game, learn it from the pros, learn how to play it, get it there. And they've just started another new one, the UKIPT, United Kingdom and Ireland Poker Tour. So, guys, all over the world, wherever you want to go, there is a poker game going on, and it's going on with PokerStars.net.
We're happy to have them as a sponsor, and if you want more information, click the sponsor link on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. We'll be right back on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table, the only show in St. Louis with a poker millionaire. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
And we are here in downtown St. Louis at the Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel. Let me plug something they've got coming up here in a couple of weeks. Aaron Neville is coming to town for his Christmas show, bringing his quintet here. He does a terrific holiday show and has been doing it for years. It's going to be here at the Lumiere Theater on Friday, December 11th, and tickets for that event are on sale now through Ticketmaster, or you can go to ETC, which is the gift shop here at Lumiere, and get your tickets then. Again, it's Friday night, December 11th, Aaron Neville and his quintet for their holiday show here in St. Louis at the Lumiere Theater. All right, Joe, the poker coach McGowan, is on the phone with us, and let's go back to some more email because we've decided to devote today's show to our listeners who have written in to DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. Here's one from Barry from Belgium. Downloads our podcast from thechipleader.com or subscribes via iTunes. We appreciate that. Barry says, I play mainly at PokerStars in low-stakes game, quarter and half-dollar, no-limit, six max. He wants to know about playing blind versus blind. He says, you know, where everyone folds to you and you raise on the small blind and the big blind re-raises because he knows that you'll often raise in that spot. And the same if you're in the big blind and the small blind raises. Do you want to blow up the pot there by re-raising or flat calling, or what do you do? I run into this problem often, and I want some advice. Now, this is a pretty generic kind of question because in poker, the answer is always, it depends.
Yeah.
But let's talk about what it depends on so Barry has an idea of how to play blind versus blind.
Yeah, I mean, this is like somebody saying, what does a car cost? Well, are we talking a Hugo or are we talking a Cadillac? I mean, there's a huge variety of things there. It makes a huge difference in your chip stack, what you have versus the other guy in the big blind on it. It makes a huge difference if it's a tournament or a cash game, what position you're in, as far as depth of the tournament on it. I mean, how has the guy been playing? Yeah, there are some standard plays here that these people make, and you shouldn't be doing it. There are some people, if it folds all the way around a small blind, two-thirds of the time they're going to shovel the chips in, assuming that you won't call, because unless you have a monster hand, you're not going to, type deal. But you can get trapped so easily that way. Same thing happens in reverse. If you know, you make your standard raise on as a small blind, and suddenly they shove, you know, 20 times what's in the pot in there, some ridiculous move on this thing. You see that all the time, and I think a positional play on the small blind when you're playing it's just a cash game and it's early on and both have a decent amount can be a horrible play. You can lose so much because then you're sitting there with some at best marginal hand. He re-raises you. He's got position behind you. He's got maybe as many chips as you do. I mean, what do you do then? Just donate those chips? I'm very careful on doing just a percentage play like a lot of these guys on the internet do. Very, very careful on doing that. I don't like doing it. I like, you know, coming in there with just a standard, doing the same thing the whole time. Then when you make a standard raise and you have the pocket aces and he makes the stupid overcall, you can just kind of go, cool, as you shove right in behind him.
Yeah.
So,
Joe, what should you be thinking of in terms of range when you're in that situation to add on to what Dennis was saying?
Well, I'm thinking that I'm so happy that Dennis went first this time. When you were asking the question, I was saying, oh, boy.
I wasn't so
sure of what to say, you know. For the emailer, it sounds like he's pretty much an online player. If you are playing a cash game, that's where hopefully your reads and you might have a little thing or two on the guy you've been playing with, whether it's your first time ever playing the session with the person or it's one of your regular, you know, cash game guys like you guys play Tuesday night in the 5-10 game at the Lumiere place. You might have a long history with him, and you know, obviously the values go up huge because it's, you know, one hand against the other. You know, it's not even shorthanded, it's kind of heads up play at that point. But you know, it's a funny spot because in Dennis kind of, you know, went into this a little bit, you have to be careful because you could still get aces even though it's just heads up. You know, you can still get an ace king or a pocket queens and some big hands when it's heads up. So people, I think, sometimes may tend to overvalue the hands knowing that you need to, you know, increase the value because it is heads up, but you really got to be careful in those spots. So I kind of go a little bit with what Dennis is saying. I don't like being overly aggressive and just doing the kind of percentage plays because, you know, I think those get you in trouble. I try to look for spots where I do have a read or, you know, I can make a good play that just makes sense and adds up. I don't like getting there and I'm small blind and I look down at any ace and I'll go all in and hopefully he doesn't have a hand or hopefully he calls me with like a queen. When the cards get turned over in poker, that's when you are in potential big trouble and can get unlucky. Even if you have ace 10 and the guy rolls over king 4 because he called you with any king, you know, it's not like a lottery. You know, a king can easily come or two fours or some funny straight or flush for him and you could be out or severely hurt in your chip stack, whether it's a cash game or tournament. So I try to find spots in general of playing smaller pots, you know, being a little conservative in some spots, but believe me, I'll be super aggressive when I think the time is right. But I don't think, you know, it's a great question. I'm glad this person emailed in. Because I think online, and I don't play a lot online, but you do see it a lot online where people play very, very aggressively blind versus blind. And that's where a lot of the guys, I think, get themselves in trouble.
And, of course, in a six-max game, you're going to run into this a lot more than you will in a full ring game.
Absolutely.
And so you got to be aware of what you're doing. And you got to be so aware of what the guy behind you is likely to do. If you've raised before and he re-raised you, and then next time around you raised and he re-raised you, well, now you have a general idea of what he's going to do.
There you go.
And now you want to do exactly what you said, Dennis, lay that trap for him.
Yep. It's so nice when the track works, you know. But there's other times, too, and I've been known to be the aggressor on this sometimes, too. And then you get caught, and you look like an idiot turning over that king four versus this guy's, you know, whatever the heck he happened
yeah,
to have.
Right.
But... you know, it's poker. Sometimes you just do it. You either look like a hero or an idiot.
All right. Here's another email to DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. Jeff writes, I just played in the Heartland event here in St. Louis, and I want to know if you think I played this correctly. There were 35 people there were 35 people left. 30 people got paid. I had 40,000 in chips. The blinds were 2.5 and 5,000. So 2,500 and 5,000. With a 500 ante. He's got, in other words, 8 times the big blind, and there's a 500 ante in there. I was on the button. It was folded around to me. I looked down at King Jack suited. I shoved. Did I do the right thing? Now, again, the answer is it depends, because we don't have other information from Jeff on what the other guys had in their stacks and all that sort of stuff. But he says in the last letter of his email, I was playing not to just make the money, but rather to win the tournament. In that regard, Dennis, is he making, or you know what, I'll put Joe on the hot seat first here because you took it last time. Joe, in that regard, is he making the right play there?
You know, I don't think that's a bad play. You know, really, you're 8 times the big blind, and that's pretty short. And that's where, you know, you want to be able to make that play, and the play is all in my opinion, because we talked a little bit of last week or the week before, and you hear the phrase a lot, fold equity. You know, you have to be able to hopefully find some situation or some spot when you have this type of pretty good hand, certainly a good hand with only the blinds left, likely to be the best hand with only the blinds left. But if they have a big stack and they wake up to any ace, they're going to call you with ace little. You know, almost for sure, you know, without question, the big blind typically would with no one behind him and closing the betting. But I think it's the right play because, you know, it's going to be hard for them to call with, you know, any random two cards there. And typically you're ahead and you can't keep folding your way to a victory there with only 8 big blinds and you're on the button. That's a pretty reasonable spot. It's a type of spot, you may not love it, but you almost have to do it, in my opinion, because you can't wait for aces and kings in these unbelievable situations because you're so short. So you never want to force it in poker, but I think that's definitely reasonable enough, in my view, to go ahead and push all in and hope that you have the best hand and you know, hope that it holds up. And if you are behind and he has ace whatever, hopefully you hit your hand and double up there. So I like the play. Dennis, what do you think?
But you're probably hoping no one calls.
Well, you're almost always hoping nobody calls. So because, you know, again, you roll the cards over, it's not very good. And so your whole tournament's at risk there. So right, I'd rather pick up the blinds and antes, you know, with the eight big blinds. And,
right, that's going to be another 11K in your stack.
That's what I was just looking at. You only got eight big blinds. Yeah. You got 11,000 in there already. You know, that's a 25% increase in your stack right there for just picking up the blinds and antes and everything on it. Again, you don't want to limp in there and have both of them call you, even though you have position behind you. You either fold or shove there. There's almost no in-between.
Yeah,
and I can't see you laying it down.
Yeah,
can't.
If you just make a small raise or even raise of 3X, now you're putting 15,000 of your 40K in.
You've
got more than a third of your chips in there.
Yeah.
You know, are you going to fold when something comes out, like an ace-high flop comes out there? You might be dead. You might not be dead. You don't know. Yeah. But now you're severely short-stacked, and whatever you get now, for the rest of that round, you're going to be thinking, I should have shoved.
Yeah. At worst, it's a semi-bluff because you have a suited, you have two face cards, you have so many hands that you can beat. Even if the guy turns over pocket queens, you've still got a decent amount of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I can't see anything but shoving there. I would have pushed my chips in, and like Joe said, hopefully they won't call, but if they do, they do.
All right, we're going to try to get to a couple more pieces of email here in a moment, plus... there has been information about next year's World Series of Poker schedule that's been leaked online. So naturally, I printed it out and brought it in with me. And we'll share it with our listeners in just a moment. This portion of the show is brought to you by the Poker Players Alliance, the organization that we're all members of, fighting to keep the game we love legal in all of its forms across the country. And I'm happy to tell you that the PPA's petition to delay the compliance date for the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act, the UIGEA, which we've talked about so much this year, that deadline is a week from today, December 1st. But they got some help from six congressmen in Kentucky who have joined with Barney Frank, the chairman of the House Financial Services Committee, and a bunch of other members of Congress, and some other lobbying organizations like the National Thoroughbred Racing Association and the American Greyhound Track Operators Association, and they are putting a lot more pressure on Congress. And the word that I hear, and I don't know what you know about this, Dennis, but the word that I hear is, with 1 week to go, we could have an announcement in the next couple of days before Thanksgiving or maybe next Monday that they have at least delayed the implementation of the UIGEA compliance.
Well, I've made several trips to Washington, as you know, and I've talked to a number of the congressmen out there, and I do have a bit of a feel to it, and the logical thing to do would be to extend it. They don't have the regs in place. They don't have anything. Of course, now I'm saying logic in Washington in the same breath.
Right.
But anyhow, the logical thing would be to extend it. They have a lot of support from these other people. We've been lobbying heavily for it. I, if I'm doing a prop bet, I'm betting that it will be extended.
Okay.
And you got 6 months to a year then to finally get this ironed out and taken care of.
If you want to join the fight, join the PPA. Go to the website, thePPA.org. That's the Poker Players Alliance, a nonprofit group of players just like you fighting for the game we love. The Poker Players Alliance, thePPA.org. This is the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com and our podcasts on thechipleader.com.
Hi, Bob Eubanks here. I can't wait to come to town with my $250,000 game show spectacular.
This November, the game shows you once loved are your chance to win big cash at Lumiere Place Casino and Hotels. Play through November to win a seat in the game show audience November 28th. And if Bob Eubanks calls your name, you could be one of 50 to take home cash and prizes. And six lucky contestants will play for their chance at $250,000. Get to Lumiere Place and earn your spot in the audience today. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
I'm Paul Harris at the Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel in downtown St. Louis, aside Team PokerStars pro Dennis Phillips. Our show is called the Lumiere Place Final Table. And Joe McGowan, who is with us, is the poker coach. And we're talking about some of your emails that you've sent to us at DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. But before we get back to that, some information has leaked out about next year's World Series of Poker schedule. I think it's only right that this information came out now since last week ESPN was showing the final of this year. This year's main event. As you may recall, Dennis and Joe, this year there was one 1K event in there, open to everybody, because there's a ladies event and there's a seniors event, which are both 1K events. But this year they had what they called a stimulus special
yes.
on that opening weekend, which had over 6,000 players in it. I believe that was one of the largest fields in World Series of Poker history, certainly the largest non-main event field ever.
It was the largest non-main event field ever, period.
Well, so that was such a success that next year they are taking that out to six 1K buy-in events, open events. There will also be the ladies' event and the seniors' event, so a total of eight next year. That in addition to the 1500s and the 2500s and the 10Ks and the higher. Good idea?
Oh, absolutely. I was actually lucky enough to be talking to Jeffrey Pollock out there when we did the first one and then afterwards for the later in the month. And he was saying, we've got to do this. It was so wide. So what you don't realize is a lot of people go out there, they don't play the main event. They go out there for some weekend through the middle of it to play one or two events. This is their poker vacation. This is where they go to enjoy it.
Yep.
And having those $1,000 buy-ins just makes it that much easier for people to do.
Right.
I think they'll have a huge response. I expect to see 3,000, 4,000, and 5,000 people in these events.
I think they could beat the 6,000 from last year.
Very well could, depending on what placement they have. If they're on, and I would hope, and I don't know this for sure, they would hope they would have them close to a weekend.
Well, the
where
first
people could do it.
The first one, and by the way, those of you who are planning your summer schedules for next year already, you're sick. But anyway, Memorial Day weekend again next year, they will kick it off, and that 1K event, Saturday, May 29th.
That could be monstrous.
The day before, they'll have the one for casino employees, which is a $500 event, which is not an open event. And also the day before, on Friday, May 28th, something they're calling the Players World Championship, which will be a 50K event. Now, there's not going to be a 50K horse this year, but there will be a 50K Players World Championship. What's that?
Honestly, we're not for sure. There's speculation on what it's going to be and everything on it, but I don't think we have a definite, definitive answer on what we're going to play there. I think it's a mixed game. I think they're supposed to have several different ones in on it.
Do you think it could be something like the seven or the eight-game mix that Daniel DeGrano likes playing online?
The eight-game would be my guess on that.
Well, considering he's an important part of the Players Advisory Council, he's probably been pushing for that.
I could see that because he would be a favorite in that game. He plays it all the time.
Now, you and I have talked about this before. Yep. If that event is going to be the big buy-in event, because there won't be a 40K next year, that'll be it. There'll be the 10Ks for the championships of the various different kinds of poker, stud and Omaha and Hold'em Limit and others. So this will be the big one. Are they going to work a deal where that actually gets on TV?
They almost have to. This last year, they were able to do the Andy for Africa. They did the Players Champion. They did a few different things like that. They need something besides the main event there.
But if they're going to do it that way, and it's going to be, say, an eight-game mix, which we think it will be, the only way it gets on TV, ESPN will only air it if the final table is all no limit.
But what people don't realize, when they originally started the horse and everything like that, they did switch it. They played this, and then when they got to the final table, then they played the no limit on it after the people are done.
Yep.
There's no reason they can't do that again.
Yep.
They can show the preliminary. They can show a hand or two of the different mixtures on that just so that the general public gets an idea of it. But then when they sit down, when it's crunch time, it's no limit hold'em.
Yep.
They
also are adding in a $25,000 buy-in no limit hold'em six-handed event because that has become so popular for players online. The six max has become, for a lot of young players, that's all they play.
Well, again, it opens up your starting hand. It makes it, again, the blind versus big blind is much more important there. No, it changes the dynamics of the game a lot.
That one will begin on June 30th. And, Dennis, just for your planning, May 28th will be the Friday that opens the World Series of Poker.
Okay.
The main event begins on, let me go forward a couple of pages here, July 5th.
Very good.
And so that takes 10 days, right?
Yep.
And so we now know where Dennis will be from May 28th to July 15th next year. And I have a feeling, Joe, you'll probably be out there as well playing a bunch of these events, right?
Yeah, I would imagine so. I'll be there.
And I'll tell you, the other nice thing about that is they're pushing back the main event to start after July 4th instead of having it run through July 4th like they did this year.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had the problem on day four of having everybody coming in there and trying to sign up on the last day.
Yes.
If their day 1A is July 5th, it's going to make it a whole lot easier.
That'll be a Monday, so it'll be the end of the July 4th holiday weekend. But still, you'll have the rest of that week.
Correct.
And hopefully they can even out the days. And maybe having it on that Monday, you get more people on day one instead of everybody coming in on day one.
I think that was the idea behind it, and I agree with them on it.
Yeah. All right. A couple of other items here. And there's a website called Casino City Times. And a guy by the name of Gary Trask wrote a piece for them. Because you mentioned Jeffrey Pollock, who was the commissioner of the World Series of Poker for the last 4 or 5 years. He stepped down just about a week and a half ago. And so Gary wrote a column speculating on who could be the new commissioner of the World Series of Poker. And there are lots of names thrown around in here, names of people who I don't think would ever take it. Chris Jesus Ferguson, Andy Block, Barry Greenstein, and Dennis Phillips. Let me read to you what it says. Phillips has been such a presence in the poker world since his memorable run at the 2008 main event that many people still think it was him that won it rather than Peter Eastgate. Of course, Phillips didn't win the title. He finished third, but he has absolutely embraced the role as a poker celebrity from day one. He's not a poker industry lifer like a lot of the people on this list, but that may be a good thing since he could bring a different perspective to the commissioner's chair. So have you filled out your application yet?
I don't think so. I've watched what Jeffrey Pollack did with this. I watched the hours and everything put into it and that. That's a hard, hard job. And he's taken it to a level now in the last 4 years. It's just absolutely fantastic. To increase from that is going to be very difficult. So whoever takes his place has some very, very big shoes to fill.
I'll name some of the other people who are on this list. Annie Duke, Joe Seabach, Howard Lederer, Greg Raymer. There's one name on this list where I would go, yeah, he'd work. You know who that name is?
Has to be Mike Sexton.
The newest member of the Poker
Absolutely.
Hall of Fame, Mike Sexton.
And Mike could do it. no doubt about it.
But would he give up the WPT, which is the brand he's been associated with for 8 years now, to step over and take care of this? Now, he has been associated with the World Series of Poker for a long, long time, got himself a bracelet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think he would want to take that job?
He's actually one that if I was in a position there with the WSOP, I would approach. He brings so much to the table just by his name, by his reputation, by the dignity he conducts himself with. And he is an extremely intelligent man.
Yes, he is. And quite a spokesperson for poker.
Absolutely.
I don't know anybody in the poker community who doesn't like Mike Sexton. He is a historian who loves the game. He's the one who started the Tournament of Champions several years ago, and on and on and on. I couldn't think of a better choice.
And he's so what I call media-friendly.
Yeah.
He is at home in front of the microphone, and everybody's at home talking to him.
Absolutely. All right, that's all the time we have for this week. Remember, you can download our podcast by going to thechipleader.com or get them via iTunes and subscribe and download them every week and listen to them, like Barry from Belgium, who emailed us. The email address is dennisphillipspoker@gmail.com. For Dennis Phillips and Joe McGowan, I'm Paul Harris on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.